New VanCast to wrap up the week. And Tom, we got to have that Game 7 energy. We finally get a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Not that energy is usually an issue for us here on the VanCast.
No, but J-Pat, we're in Vancouver, which means we have to revel in a Leafs Game 5 loss and bring that small town energy to bear. Does it, J-Pat, make up for the Canucks' awful season? Does it?
Hey.
Does it?
It got the morning guys an entire show, so credit to them.
I love it. I love it. But I also, it feels very like cold prairie town of us. You know, like, right?
Well, I think what happened was Alex Galchenyuk must have listened to the last VanCast where we were praising him for, you know, a rebirth and doing what he was doing. And then,
I was thinking as watching that game, I was like, has this guy earned himself $2 to $3 million this year? Like this in this series? I was thinking that all. And then the giveaway, and it's like, oh, you know, that was a costly mistake in a lot of ways for a pending UFA.
Well, we get a Game 7 for sure, and there may be another one coming down the pipe, and it looked for a while there like Nashville was going to extend its series with Carolina, but ultimately the Hurricanes prevail, a couple of overtime games, so we're getting some good excitement, we're getting entertainment value, certainly in the playoffs. Of course, the Canucks on the sidelines, they're not involved in any of this.
Nashville, by the way, what a disaster. What a disaster. Like, you hold on to guys like Granlund and Holla. You know, like, they were going to sell. They decide not to sell at the deadline. They hold on to all these guys. For what? Like, for what, J-Pat? For three playoff home dates? For three playoff home dates in a pandemic? They're gonna expose both Johansson and Duchesne in expansion, I think. Those guys total $16 million in cap space. Like, how does that this team get better? Talk about out of ideas. My goodness.
Well, I was watching that game and thinking, like, look at all these future Vancouver Canucks that are sharing the ice at Bridgestone Arena. You just mentioned Holla and Granlund and Brock McGinn and Martinook. And it was just a convention of future Vancouver Canucks.
Guys we've talked about in the last pieces. 48 hours. Yeah, that's good. I like it. Yeah.
Hey, you, I said, you're a man of your word. Credit to you. Not that this should come as a surprise to anybody, but you've said for a couple of pods here that, you know, you were going to drill down on the Canucks' current salary cap situation, and you did. Again, another instructive piece. If people haven't had a chance to read it, I think, it just sets up what's to come here in the weeks and months ahead. And, you know, it's not that, because, look, you and I talk about this three times a week, but when you see the current contractual situation, when you see their cap situation as it stands right now, and they're going to get Pettersson done, and they're going to get Quinn Hughes. But that first chart that you have in your piece, like, it just slaps you in the face. Like, it can't do anything but sort of, you know, you've got Tyler Motte on the right side on the second line, essentially, right now, based on players that the Canucks have under contract at the moment. And then there's just nothing but massive gaps all over the place.
Yeah, work to be done, right? Like, there is work to be done. Well, and like Zach MacEwen, you know, he barely gets off my top nine at any point in the exercise, really. You know, he finally gets the fourth line eventually once I move JT Miller into center. And then people in the comments are like, you're a flip-flopper. It's like, no, what do you mean? Like, I'm still not a big fan of JT Miller at center. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to project the Canucks to move him there, considering I think that's what the organization's thinking. Like, at some point, my opinion matters less in projecting what the Canucks are going to do than what I expect them to do. Like, come on, I'm not flip-flopping on this. Anyway, how about the left side of the defense? Like, Jack Rathbone is the only, like, Jack Rathbone will qualify again as a rookie skater next season. He's the only lefty under contract, full-time lefty, left side D. Like, there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work to do here, and the Canucks need an awful lot. I mean, even once you bring back Pettersson and Hughes, I still think you're talking about constructing an entirely new third line, at least, and rebuilding a defense corps that was nowhere near good enough. And, you know, I tried to spell it out, but once you get to like 17 players with Pettersson and Hughes re-signed, you know, you're not looking at a ton of cap space. You're looking at something like 8.5 to, you know, maybe less, maybe a little more, depending on where Pettersson and Hughes come in. But it's like, man, your average top four defenseman in the NHL makes like $4.5 million. You know, like you can't reliably reconstruct a bottom six and a defense core with $8.5 million in cap space. It just can't be done. You can't expect to be able to achieve that. Even though, of course, and this is the other thing a lot of people took from my article yesterday, like, oh, they can't punt on the season. It's like, no, it's not about punting on the season. You obviously have to try to do your best to ice a contending team, you know, at this stage of the team's development within the parameters that you're able to work through. And whether that includes carving out additional cap space through trades or whatever on the, you know, or creativity on the trade market or in free agency, like, yeah, you got to work on it. The things that I was really spelling out that I think the club should avoid are trading significant futures to offload a Holtby, a Beagle, a Roussel, or an Erickson deal. And, you know, avoiding using a buyout on a contract like Braden Holtby's, which will eat into a 22-23 cap situation that I think the club needs to be extraordinarily protective of, because finally it augurs, you know, flexibility for this team.
And I think it was your column yesterday that kind of drove the conversation. Like, there was a lot of chatter in the market yesterday about, you know, trading this first round pick here. Like, the draft lottery coming up on Wednesday, we'll know where the Canucks are slotted at that point. And I don't know, maybe it's people are starting to look ahead now to the draft lottery and starting to brush up on their prospects and all those types of things. But I sort of picked up on this sense yesterday in the market that there was a lot of talk about, you know, should they trade, should they be open to trading their first pick here in the draft? And again, we'll see where the ping pong balls ultimately slot them. But if they stay where they are, give or take, I mean, they got the ninth best odds if they stay at 9 or drop to 10, whatever. We're talking about a top 10 pick that has currency. Like, to me, if you are going into the market with a top 10 pick, you're going big game hunting. Like, you're looking to add a piece. Tom, they can't take on a piece with a sizable contract commitment right now.
No, well, and people are like, I mean, people, you know, there's a dissonance between excitement for how Pod Colson can revamp the Canucks bottom six, for example, 10th overall pick, Vasily Podkolzin, and the idea that you should trade a pick, right? It's like that Family Guy episode. It's like you could have a boat or you could have what's in the mystery box. Like, it could be anything. It can even be a boat, you know, like, and people are willing to walk away from something that feels ephemeral, like a pick that you're not even sure if it's 1, 2, 9, or 10 in the draft lottery, as opposed to, you know, 2 years down the line, if you get like a, you know, 20-year-old stud center, Mason McTavish breaking in, you know, and what that could mean for the Canucks in terms of their depth and on in a season in which Pettersson's 24 and, you know, Hughes is 23. Like, I don't know, man. I personally would not be strongly advocating for the Canucks to trade that first round pick unless they're trading back to accumulate additional bullets to use in an uncertain class where, you know, I do think lists are going to be divergent and there's a very good chance that the Canucks, you know, could, for example, take like the player they rate 15th best in the class in the 30s or 40s, right? Like, if you're trading back and getting another second round bullet, you know, that might be worth it to me just because of this weirdo class. But
right.
Typically speaking, I would not advocate dealing that pick to get off of money. Like, that to me, is, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Right. And look, they did it with JT Miller. That worked out all right for the Canucks. I still didn't like the trade in the moment. And, you know, it just doesn't feel like the kind of move that an organization at this point in its competitive cycle should be going down for a second time in 3 years. Like, you know, if you were looking to put the if you want to put the finishing touches on something, you know, maybe you're looking, if your first round pick is going to be in the final five of the first round, like, that's a totally different conversation. Like, I look at Colorado. I keep dreaming of the way that the Canucks can get back to a roster that looks something like Colorado's. And, you know, MacKinnon was the first overall pick. I mean, that one, and an incredible first overall pick. He wasn't Nail Yakupov. He was Nathan MacKinnon. You know, Landeskog went second overall, but Rantanen was 10th in his draft class. You know, they completely missed on Connor Bleakley in 2014. Like, swing and a miss. But you can afford to do that when you crush it the way they did in those other drafts. Plus, you know, you look at the way that they're surrounding that core. Tyson Jost, Cale Makar, Bowen Byram, Alex Newhook, all first rounders as well. So
like, Bowen Byram not even in the lineup. Like, right. Bowen Byram's so good, and he's not even in the lineup. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. They also have Connor Timmins taken, a pick before Cole Lind.
Early,
awesome. Like, that guy's playing major minutes for 25 teams in this league. Barely in the lineup for Colorado.
And then I saw that they were cutting their head of pro scouting loose yesterday.
Amateur, wasn't it?
Amateur scouting.
I don't know the dynamics well enough to have a really informed take on that. I should probably dive in or dig into that a little bit. But yeah, that was, look, they've done pretty well. Like, they've done pretty well on the amateur side.
Tampa's build is a little different when Stamkos, Hedman, both top picks. And Vasilevsky was a first rounder as well. But, when we've talked about, and they turned Drouin into Sergachev.
I get this thing that people say to me a lot, J-Pat, where they're like, you have misled the market into thinking that entry-level contracts are key to winning. Like, teams don't win on their entry-level contracts. So I'm wondering, I meant to do this yesterday, actually, but I'm wondering if you would give me, your top five teams of the cap era, like the last 15 years, your top five teams with rebuilds that you think in an ideal world the Canucks would end up emulating.
Oh, off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Colorado's done.
Like, Colorado's done, yeah. They don't really have an entry-level star at the moment, do they? They just have Cale Makar. Well, Cale Makar's a star.
and Byram and Newhook are going to be there if they're not already.
They sort of wasted Nathan MacKinnon's entry-level deal and kind of didn't pay for it, right? I mean, they still got better, but there were some years of pain there. But yeah, I mean,
The Leafs.
And they're the final year of Marner and Matthews' ELCs, they were able to go out and add John Tavares in free agency, and then they lost to the Bruins, who ended up making it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in the first round. I think pretty clear that, a bounce or two one way or another, the Leafs could have had a deep run in the last year of Marner and Matthews' ELCs. Who else?
Are we looking at Carolina? Does Carolina qualify?
Yeah, I mean, Carolina qualifies. Their latest build, they made the Eastern Conference Final, 2 years ago with Sebastian Aho before the offer sheet, right? So,
right, yes.
I mean, that one's easy. That one's clear. And then, of course, this season they've still got Andrei Svechnikov on his entry-level deal, not to mention Martin Nekash. So that's, two-thirds of their that's a third of their top six. And then, that's sort of it for them. But two-thirds of your top six on entry-level deals in Carolina.
I don't know. Who else am I missing?
Chicago. They won the cup with Taves and Kane on their ELCs.
Right. Yeah,
Pittsburgh. They won a cup with Evgeny Malkin. Their first cup came with Evgeny Malkin on his ELC. Like, there are exceptions. The Los Angeles Kings won their cups after Doughty and Kopitar got paid. I mean, it can be done, but and Tampa, of course, is like my favorite example, because you make Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final with Stamkos and Hedman on their entry-level deals in 2011, right? They make the Stanley Cup Final in 2016. That's with Kucherov on his ELC. And then they win the Cup. And the year they win the Cup, they've got two top four defensemen in Cernak and Sergachev, plus their second-line center and Anthony Cirelli all on ELC deals as well. The Tampa Bay Lightning are like the perfect example of managing it. So yeah, I mean, does every cup winner have a star player on an entry level deal? No. But if you go around and sort of pick out the most successful rebuilds of the last 15 years in the NHL, you're going to see a lot of teams making deep runs with players on the entry level system. And that's why it's key to sort of manage it, and why, the Canucks sort of burning last season, right? And it wasn't just the results, it was their entire approach. It was the cutting of player personnel spend. It was allowing every UFA to walk. It was not exercising a buyout, not even making an offer to Toffoli, right? Like, the club didn't conduct themselves with ambition last year, and that was like a high leverage window to go for it. And now this year, you kind of need to spend the offseason pruning a bit, being really disciplined. And that's too bad, because It's like the organization's goals have sort of vacillated in the opposite direction of like what the structural logic of their build suggests they should do. And it's like that just, I'm frustrated for Canucks fans and I'm frustrated for this young core that it's sort of unfolded this way.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Tom, we record this on this Friday morning heading into the weekend. It was a week ago today we heard from both Jim Benning and Travis Green. Travis Green getting his extension. We were told the next order of business was Ian Clark, and then this review of both the remaining coaching staff and the front office as well. A week later, where do we stand with all of that? I know that you were on with Sakaris and Price on Thursday afternoon with an update on the Sedins as well.
Well, just that it's not going to happen this week, right? And I think that's not because it's just not getting announced. Like, they don't want to announce it on a Friday, so wait till Monday. I think there's still some things to figure out. I think it's, you know, the Twins are deliberate, intelligent, you know, like fully formed adult cats. They are interested in working. You know, they are interested in doing things a certain way. They're interested in making sure that they're put into a position where they feel they can help. And, you know, I still think it's going to happen. I think fundamentally, and this is, you know, so often when we're talking about or sort of empathizing our way through issues or possible news stories, you know, you almost assume like a cynical bent for key decision makers. The Twins, you kind of have to throw that out the window. Like, I genuinely think this is still going to happen. And the fundamental reason for it, I think, is that the Twins view the franchise as, you know, like their life's work. Like, they put two decades into hockey in Vancouver. They've adopted this place as their home. I think there's a sense that if they can help, they want to. And yet it's not done. I think they're weighing something. I'm not sure what it is. And, you know, I'm curious to see sort of ultimately where this lands and exactly what they end up doing. But I do think they'll join. I'm not exactly sure. You know, I'm not exactly sure when. Or in what exact capacity, but they're still working on it. And then the Ian Clark and the coaching staff thing, you know, that one's interesting. I think the club definitely was committed to trying to retain Clark. The industry certainly expected that to be difficult. And, you know, I haven't really kept my finger on the pulse of that over the course of this week. My best intel was sort of last week in regards to their overall posture, but, you know, make no mistake, the club values what Clark brings, not just in terms of preparing his goalies, but also in terms of contributing on the amateur and pro scouting side for goaltending prospects or hopefuls. So, look, it would be well worth their time to get that done, especially in a non-capped league. But I do understand how it's complicated, considering how late in the day we are and, you know, considering Clark's nature, right, which is proud, a little bit headstrong. Certainly confident in himself and probably believes he's got a lot of leverage based on the work he's done in Vancouver over the past, you know, 3-4 years, quite rightly. So we'll see if they can get that one done. I sort of remain skeptical, but, you know, I do know that the organization was intent on doing what they could to see if they can make it work.
Just back to the Sedins for a sec. Have you even taken a moment to contemplate, like, what if Henrik thinks JT Miller should be a center and Daniel feels strongly that he should be a winger?
Yeah, I think they'd, I don't know. I don't know what they'd do. I think, I bet you they think he's a winger, though. Intelligent guys like that, come on.
Not after reading your piece yesterday.
They know JT Miller, yeah. One thing they definitely think is that Drance is a flip-flopper.
I want to pick up on something that I remember you said, because you did that piece where you sat down with Daniel and Henrik and you went over, you know, some of the greatest plays of their careers. And it was a cool article and it was a great feature. And just, you know, the fact that they bought in and spent the time they did with you. And, you know, they've been away from the game for 3 seasons now, right? I mean, we'd see them around the rink when we were around the rink seeing people, but, you know, they would pop in from time to time and say hello. They still had friends on the team, that kind of stuff. But they have stepped back, obviously, from the National Hockey League. And yet, I think I remember you telling me, like, you know, these guys are still pretty dialed in to the things that they were seeing in the current and modern game. Like, they may be retired, but they're still keeping pretty close tabs on things.
100%. Well, and I like the idea that if they were ever to, like, spend time in player development, you'd just have this team of players all capable of perfectly handling pucks rimming around the wall at speed on their backhand and, like, making no look one-touch saucer passes immediately upon controlling it. Be fun to watch. but you know, look, the Twins are as cerebral as it gets. And I think there's no question that people of that intelligence level, work ethic, and, you know, character can help any organization. Like, you know, whether you're a Fortune 500 company or a hockey team, and obviously the hockey team would have, you know, more to do with the area of the Twins' specialization. But I actually don't even think it matters. Like, if I was running an investment house, I'd want these guys working for me. Or with me, because I just think that highly of who they are as people.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they have an on-ice role in any capacity of, like, player development. I mean, to me, it sounds like it's above that this would be in a management role, and yet I wonder if they would want to be hands-on in any way. But, you know, we saw it with a guy like Gretzky going behind the bench in Phoenix. Like, it's one thing to be a great player, it's another to be a great coach, and obviously, it didn't work out necessarily for Wayne. There were other issues down in the desert, as there still are all these years later. But, you know, like, I'm just trying to envision Daniel and Henrik getting in the Volvos and heading out to Abbotsford to work with prospects. Like, I have trouble seeing that, but, like, I don't know at this stage, you know, what they want these roles to be.
No, and nor do I, to be totally honest. I just think that they want to be put in a position where they can help and where they can succeed. And I think they're going to be very deliberate about where their feet fall. Whether that ends up, you know, involving some on-ice work or, you know, some training work or, you know, player development, consulting with some prospects in Abbotsford. You know, I'm not sure. I think that's still work in progress. So curious to see where this lands. I still think it happens. But obviously not quite on the accelerated timeline that we all expected when the news first broke, what, I guess 10 days, 11 days ago now? And conversations had been ongoing for weeks before it. So, you know, certainly interesting that it's not dragged out, but that it's, you know, unfolded in such a patient fashion. And I think one other thing that suggests strongly to me, JPAT, too, is that, you know, the market's first reaction was like, this is an example, like, this is a PR play, right? Like an empty PR play. These guys are baubles, right? But they're not. Then they're not going to be. And I think one of the reasons why this has taken so long is how seriously, you know, they intend on taking this in the event that they commit to rejoin the organization in a management capacity.
I do wonder, though, like, because there was talk at one point, like, they're going to be shields. They're going to be on either side of Jim at his year-end press conference. And then they got Travis Dunn, and they were able to put Travis there. You know, had things gone sideways with Travis Green and he had walked, you know, might that have expedited all of this? And you know, I think it is still possible that they could have turned to a plan B of introducing the Sedins to try to take a little bit of the heat off. But I think the fact that they got the coach Dunn and were able to present him a week ago, you know, changed that course of action for
I don't think so. I don't think the Twins were ever going to get Dunn that quickly. Just because of who they are and how they are and how they go about their business. I think they were always going to take their time, do their full due diligence. Like, I don't think that was ever a realistic option to put the Twins up with Jim. Although, you know, being in a trio with the Sedin twins, I mean, would have resulted in a lot of nice tap-ins for Jim. I mean, he'd never have had it so easy.
Right. And again, it's parallel universe stuff. We'll just never know. But, like, the temperature was pretty high. And if the coach had said, no, that's it, I'm gone, like, you do wonder, and I agree that the Twins would have had some say. Like, they wouldn't want to be used in that way, but I do wonder if it would have sped the process to try to get something done with them so that the club would have had an announcement that, you know, I think would be universally embraced in this market. Hey, one of the things that I love about playoff hockey, I prefer it when the Canucks are in it just because the season goes on and the fan base is that much more engaged, although Offseason brings certainly plenty of angles to attack, and we'll do that. But what I love about playoff hockey is just getting to watch players that I don't see on a daily basis and getting to watch them, you know, night after night after night. And especially in this year when there was so much focus on the Canadian division, I'll admit that I didn't tune into a lot of games that were being played south of the border. And so I think you tweeted this out the other night about Mitch Marner on the penalty kill. And I remember when the Canucks faced the Leafs midseason as well, and it jumped out at me that, you know, the Leafs use guys like Marner and they use Zach Hyman on the penalty kill. And you see Mark Stone doing it in Vegas, and Aho and Stahl in Carolina. Brad Marchand has been a staple of Boston's penalty kill for a while. All these good players that take on that duty. And I love sort of that chess game within the game of watching these smart guys up ice, you know, trying to force the power play into positions that it doesn't want to get to on the breakout. And I do, I dream of the day that the Canucks can incorporate better players on their penalty kill. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. We've talked about how Bo Horvat sort of profiles as a guy that should be a better penalty killer than he is. They used him a little bit down the stretch due to some injuries there, but it is one aspect of the game that I love, is these teams that employ their best players in that fashion.
Well, and you didn't even mention Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner, Alex Kerfoot. That
I did. I mentioned Mitch Marner right off the top, and I gave you credit for your point.
Oh, right. Sorry. And you didn't even mention Jordan Stahl and Sebastian Aho.
Well, I did, but that's all right. Carry on.
Well, and you forgot Brad Marchand.
Yes.
Wow.
And there's this guy in Vegas, Stone. You may have heard of him. He's
Mark Stone. Did you mention him? sorry, J-Pat. I don't know what happened to me there. I was just like listening to the names and I was like, where's Mitch Marner? My goodness. I'm a space
cadet. Blame it on
today.
The dog. Blame it on Wallace.
Yeah, no, he's sleeping. He's a good boy. Okay. I agree with you. And the guy that I think could do it really well among Vancouver's elite players is Elias Pettersson, right? Like, Elias Pettersson, I think, could be really disruptive. He's got that hand eye. Like, he can bat pucks out of the air. You know, like, you couldn't send saucer passes within several feet of him. He'd be too high risk to tip it. Even that threat causes teams to attack differently on the power play. But here's the problem with Elias Pettersson, I think, from a Canucks perspective, is guy is a maniac. Like, there's nothing he does that he doesn't want to do 100% right always. And so would you be comfortable putting him out there knowing that he's going to sell out to block shots and he's going to put himself in harm's way because that's what the job requires to do it right, and he's going to do the job right? I think there's an understandable reluctance to put him in a stationary defensive spot considering the injury risk. And, you know, I honestly can't disagree with it, right? Like, I can't disagree with it.
No, I hear you. And absolutely, it's a risk. I mean, we see it all the time. Guys putting themselves in harm's way. But the other
thing,
too,
is... Have you seen
this
chatter, by the way? There's a lot of chatter in our market, especially in the Athletic comment sections. Like, there's some, like, Pettersson... There's two things that are being said about Pettersson that are bothering me, J-Pat, that I just wanted to quickly touch on. One is this idea that he's now like often hurt. Have you been seeing this?
Yeah.
I mean, he had a concussion in his first year, right? Mm-hmm. From Michael Matheson, remarkable human being.
Yes.
And
he got tangled up with Kotkaniemi in the
right. So yeah.
In Montreal.
Right. And he had that was a knee. And then and then he had a freak fracture on his wrist, which, you know, he didn't return from this past season. Does any of that profile to you as a guy with like a repetitive injury history, or are those just a bunch of freak incidents? I don't think there's any durability concern there for me at all. Like, none. That happens. It's hockey. Bad hit, freak collision with Kotkaniemi, weird freak collision that, you know, sorry, and I said fracture is a wrist. We don't actually know if it's a fractured wrist or not, and I don't know if it's fractured. We just know that it's a wrist injury, and yes, obviously a severe one because it kept him out for so long. So, those are all freak things. Like, I don't see, we need a lot more you know, we need a lot more, I think, before we say that this guy, who in his first two seasons missed 12 games combined and then lasted through a playoff run, is, you know, a significant injury risk just because he got injured for 3 months down the stretch this year. Like, I don't see anything that's like, these aren't repetitive injuries. It's not like there's a core issue here or like a back disc issue that's, you know, a concern for the long term. There's nothing like that. It's right. Ridiculous. No, I agree with that. It's ridiculous. Yep. And then the other one that I'm seeing a lot of is like, Pettersson's overrated. People are like, you know, he's not a superstar. Like, why are people calling him? He's over. You know, we overrated what Pettersson is because of this past season. And it's like, you know, guy hit 10 posts in the first 26 games and had 21 points. You know, like there's a world where 3 inches of total difference and Pettersson had 28 points and 50 and 18 goals in his first 26 games. Like, what are we talking about? If there's a lot of reasons to be down on this Canucks team, in my opinion, I tend to be one of the people in this market who's pretty low on the true talent level of this club. But the one thing that I feel pretty confident about is that Elias Pettersson's really good at hockey and the Canucks, like, he's the least of their concerns. He's going to have a bounce back season. Quinn Hughes is going to figure out the defensive side of the game. Like, those are the two things that I think you should be able to be like, hey, you know, those are clearly great players. We've seen them excel. They're going to bounce back from what we saw this past season. Like, that's the one thing that I'm the most confident about in assessing this club. And I'm the doomsday sayer. Like, come on, right. Come on. I don't understand what's going on here.
And further to your point, like, and I've raised this before, but my mind is still blown by the fact he played 26 games, Tom, and he had one power play assist.
Right.
That's not going to be the way it goes for the rest of his career. He had 16 the season before when they had the fourth best power play. They do have to incorporate him, you know, using him as a decoy. He's their most skilled offensive player. They've got to get him more touches, and they've got to get away from the predictability of everything running through that left side. Like, put him on the other side of the ice, and they've done that at times. You know, put him on his downhill. He can be a playmaker. He can still use his shot from that side. Like, I do think that that's an area. The Canucks went from the fourth best power play to the 25th best power play season over season. The component parts are there to be way better. And obviously, Pettersson missed half the season, but he played 26 games and he had one power play assist, and it drove me nuts that I had to go look it up. It was a second assist on the only Canuck goal in a 5-1 loss in Toronto as part of that 6-game losing streak. So as a playmaker, he essentially had no impact on the Canucks' power play in the games that he played, you know, in terms of getting the puck to other guys in scoring areas. So,
but you know what though, like when Pettersson was in the lineup, until Pettersson's injury, PP1 was just as good as it was the year before. They just had bad shooting luck. That's it. That's really it. They just weren't hitting or converting at the same rate that they did the last year. But in terms of generating chances, expected goals, scoring chances, like all of the under the hood numbers on PP1 were totally good. Like where the Canucks in the first half of the season struggled on the power play was that they got nothing. Like it was literally a wasteland on PP2. Right. You know, their power play is going to be fine in my view. And one thing that you notice late in the year, I have some screenshots that I almost used for some Army's posts, but I never did, was like, you will never see a skinnier PK alignment than what Canucks PP1 faced after Pettersson left the lineup. Like teams just stacked four guys up in the middle to take away Miller, to take away Bo Horvat specifically, but the Miller to Bo Horvat pass and to take away Quinn Hughes and Miller's back and forth game. Without Pettersson, there is no gravity pulling anyone to the right side in terms of how PK clubs lined up against Vancouver. There's just nothing. There's nothing there. So, honestly, that's another thing. That's another area. Like one area where I'm pretty confident the Canucks are going to be good next season is on the power play. Like that's one area where I do think you can count on this club bouncing back. That to me is, again, the least of your worries. They obviously were nowhere near good enough with the man advantage this past season.
Well, there you go. People that call you a doomsdayer, We'll end it on a little glimpse of positivity that, you know, that is the path forward for the Vancouver Canucks is improvement from within. And if you're going to bank on somebody, oh yeah, bank on your best player to bounce
Seriously,
back, to be motivated, to get
are you kidding
the contracts.
Me? Like, are we, I mean, what did you see from Pettersson's first 2 years that convinced you that, you know, the 21 points in 26 games with, you know, leading the NHL in post hits by like a magnitude of, like, you could times the next closest guy's posts hit by two, and you'd still be less than where Pettersson was at the time that he got injured. Like, what? I just,
the
it makes no
sense. The
start to
the season was strange. The start to the 1 point in six and 2 points in eight games, and Miller didn't play the first three. That was some of it. No preseason. Like, I think, and I thought that was really sort of fascinating to hear Pettersson bring that up on his own. You know, we kind of ran through his comments from a week ago as well, but I think that was one of the things that stuck with me was, you know, clearly he's still bothered by the fact that he wasn't at the top of his game to start the season. And so with a full off season and training camp and some preseason games to work off a little bit of rust, you know, I would anticipate that he'll hit the ground running and he'll look a lot more like he did in his first two seasons in the National Hockey League than a guy that, for whatever reason, and it really never was explained, but it's in the past now, but, you know, he stumbled out of the gates. He did. He wasn't as sharp as he wanted to be, but, you know, you point out too, I think he was hitting posts early in the season, and a bounce here, a bounce there, you know, maybe it jettisons him back into sort of that frame of mind that allows him to be the player that he has.
Well, and it wasn't just luck. Like, his first 10 games were weird in terms of the level of play driving, too. There was something funky going on.
Right.
You know, and I think, I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people around the Canucks were happy to hear that he's going back to Sundsvall and Anjay and getting back to his routine this offseason, right? I mean, I think that can only benefit him, too. Although, first, he's doing this barnstorming tour of North America, hanging out on the lake with Brock Besser and recording diss tracks with Michael Bublé. But fundamentally.
But I think that's important too. Like, I'm not going to try to get inside his head, but he said, and Besser said, like, the injured guys this year weren't around the team. Like, Besser and Pettersson are really good friends with the pandemic and the protocols and everything.
Yeah.
They didn't get to see each other. So I'm glad to see that he's going and hanging out with his buddy. That's what he should be doing in the offseason.
And everyone deserves a little bit of happiness after the year that we've all lived through, right? Like, everyone deserves to enjoy some time on the lake, you know, if they can. But
including Mitch Marner and
and who did you mention Mitch Marner?
I did.
If you're not confident that Pettersson's going to bounce back, like, I just don't know what you're watching. I have no idea what you're watching. And to conclude that a guy who's had three freak injuries completely unrelated to one another has got all of a sudden got a durability issue, blows my mind. Like, that is a foregone conclusion in need of justification, not a reasonably reached one. And I just wanted to mention that because I'm seeing it increasingly in my comments, in our comments section at The Athletic. And the VIPs are savvy. So if VIPs are saying that, then I'm sure there's a lot of Canucks fans privately, you know, who think it. And I just want to push back on it because I don't think there's any basis, evidentiary basis for that.
Well, next week brings the draft lottery, and so that'll give us more talking points. And again, it will solidify where
another Canucks draft lottery. Yay!
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
and I mentioned
boy.
That because the Athletic Hockey Show is now expanding to 5 days a week. You already had Woo-hoo! Mondays with Ian Mendez and Haley Salvian. Tuesdays is Craig Custance and Sean Gentile. Wednesday, we've got the two-man advantage with Burnside and LeBron. Thursday, it's Ian Mendez and Down Goes Brown. Now on Fridays, and this is something that Canuck fans probably want to latch on to. Again, they're likely to have a top 10 pick unless they do something with it. But the Prospect Series
Ooh.
Goes on Fridays now with Max Boltman and Corey Pronman.
So, the Detroit Red Wings writer.
Yes, exactly. Well versed.
No one knows prospects like Max. I love it. Max is a bright guy. That'll be must listen. And look, there's, you know, we'll get into this. I'm sure we'll have tons of debates, especially in the event that the Canucks somehow move up. But Don't trade this pick. There's really good players available. Like, I think Beignet, despite what Central Register said, I think he'll go ahead of guys like McTavish and who's the North Vancouver kid? He was third. Kent Johnson. Kent Johnson.
Kent Johnson. Port Moody.
Port Moody. Okay.
But we can't take credit for...
Why did I think
you were credit for... I don't know, but we can't take credit for all the great players. So sure,
so. Jeff Patterson, Morgan Riley. Yes. No, but the... like that kid, those guys are legit. Those guys are so good. They're such good prospects. I think McTavish is slightly more likely to stick at center in the NHL, and that might, depending on which team picks. I mean, we've seen with, you know, the Barrett Haytons and Kotkaniemis of the world, right? Centers tend to be prioritized. Guys who the industry believes will be natural centermen at the NHL level. But like, there's going to be really good players. The Canucks are going to add a really good player at 9 or 10. And, you know, I mean, you got to hold on to that pick because that guy's going to be 20 before Pettersson and Hughes hit their 25th birthdays, right? Like, that's the type of artillery you need. The additional $3 million in cap space or $6 million in cap space from bundling that pick to get off Eriksson for this season, like, even that $6 million leaves you with $14 million-ish to rebuild your defense core and third line. Like, the leverage of that does not compare with hitting on a top 10 pick in this draft class, who's going to be potentially, and more than potentially, like likely to contribute in some way to your NHL roster while Pettersson and Hughes are still in their statistical primes. Like, it makes no sense. That's a talking point that needs to die. The Canucks should be keeping and making that pick unless they're trading down to get extra bullets.
I'm here for the Canucks adding all sorts of better players, yes, whether it's through the draft or free agency or trades
and then putting them on the PK.
And then put them on the PK.
Let's go.
And score some shorthanded goals too.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing about putting good players out on the penalty kill is, you know, hey, on the odd occasion, you're going to get a counterattack. You might actually score a shorthanded goal, something the Canucks really aren't a threat to do with the personnel that they employ. Check out our comment section for every podcast episode we do. There's a specific comment section there, so drop us a note, some feedback. It's always welcome. I'm in there checking it out from time to time. So check out our comment section for each podcast episode of the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for $3.99 a month. Bring on Game 7.
Steal. What a
Vegas,
steal.
Minnesota.
Oh, Vegas. Vegas. Vegas in a Game 7. My goodness. They always make it so hard for themselves, huh? Haven't seen a lot of broom in this series.
You picked Mini, I've got Vegas, so let's see how this
and
thing
shakes
down.
And I picked Mini in 7, by the way. I've got almost every pick wrong.
That's all right.
It's incredible how badly I've done. Like, I had the Panthers, that didn't happen. I had, obviously, I had the Oilers, but everyone had the Oilers. I had the Caps. So I think, like, I kind of need Mini to come through here. I need Mini in Toronto to come through here so that I, like, go 500 almost.
Well, big weekend ahead. We'll see how it all plays out. We'll reconvene and we'll do this again with new episodes.
Lots of Leafs talk on Monday's episode.
Exactly. new episodes of the VanCast, including, we'll look at Wednesday is the draft lottery, so that'll sort of be news of the week, but we'll see what the weekend holds. If there's anything new with the Canucks, we'll be all over it next week when we get back at it.
Emergency pod if the Canucks win the draft lottery?
We may have to go down that road. We'll see. We shall see. For Drancer, it's J-Pat. As always, thanks so much for listening. Have yourself a great weekend. This has been another episode of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.